Kia ora. Ko fo smith aho. Nau mai ki te whare. Welcome to the House. Last week was Grant Robertson's final week in Parliament, after nearly 16 years as an MP, and some time prior to that on staff. As part of his farewell week, he gave the traditional valedictory speech, one that was praised, to me, by MPs from across the House. He also gave a generous slew of exit interviews with various media, but those interviews focused almost entirely on his time as a minister in government. So the morning after his valedictory, as his office was about to be packed away, I sat down with Grant Robertson in the Labour caucus room to ask about a few other things, particularly some of the crucial skills and requirements for MPs, and what he would change about question time. Firstly, I asked what he thought of him being described by his political friends and foes alike as a great parliamentarian.
It does mean a lot to me because it is a very important part of our jobs as members of parliament. I think what we do in the community is hugely important.
Yeah.
I think obviously what we do if we get the opportunity to be in government is important. But ultimately the job title is Member of Parliament, and the debating chamber is where we do the heavy lifting of that job. And so, yeah, that does mean a lot to me. And I've always enjoyed the debating chamber particularly. That might have come through.
Yeah, yeah. Not everyone relishes it, I don't think. Some people seem terrified of it. You know, the first time someone stands up to ask a question, or a backbencher, you just see them quaking.
Mm.
But you obviously really like being up there and out there.
I think so. I mean, the joke I always tell school kids is that when I was their age, I either wanted to be a lawyer or an actor, and now I get to be both. and yeah, there's a bit of that in me. I actually do remember the very first time I stood up to do a proper speech in Parliament was my maiden speech. We'd had some urgency and I had to do something else before that, but the actual first speech, and I did think I was going to faint when I did that. So it's not like it all just clicked into place straight away. But yeah, I mean, I've always enjoyed debating and public speaking, and I think they are pretty important skills in being an MP, and if you don't have them, you are going to struggle. But for me, I was fortunate that I had a bit of that coming in and so felt comfortable talking.
Was that one of the things that drew you here?
No, I don't think it per se. I had watched and observed parliamentary debate. Obviously, I'd worked here and all of that. I'd written speeches for other people to deliver in Parliament.
Yeah.
And so I guess I had an idea of how that side of the job worked, and I enjoyed it. And I think fundamentally, if you enjoy something, you'll often end up looking like you're quite good at it.
I particularly want to ask you about the writing of speeches.
Mm.
Because a lot of the speeches that MPs give actually aren't written. Mm. The very best MPs can stand up and just hammer it off the cuff, and I'm always impressed by that. And you do that, but you also write beautiful speeches. How do you do it? What's the process?
Depends on the speech. So for the valedictory, and actually for the maiden speech, but for the valedictory, I just get down what I think's important. I have a friend, and I'll probably muck this up, but who has a parable about writing, which is the parable of the madman, the architect, the builder, and the judge. And that most people, when they're writing something, do that in reverse order. So they sit there and they anguish over whether something should be in, like they're the judge. Whereas actually you should reverse the order and just dump down everything that you want to write. Be the madman at the beginning and then build your house after that and judge whether it's good. And so for those bigger sort of speeches, I just tend to dump down all of my thoughts and then go through and refine and bring other things in. And that is what I did for the valedictory. And I probably, in a couple of sessions, got down most of what I was in the madman's head and then refined it over. In fact, I did work quite hard on that because it was pretty hard to squeeze in,
yeah,
you know, 2 decades into 30 minutes. For other speeches where I do write them, it's perhaps a little less like that. I sometimes do a bit more structuring. But for the most part in Parliament, I tried not to use notes.
Mm.
And in fact, much to the frustration of my staff, I barely use notes even as a Minister of Finance, because I have a view about public speaking that being able to look at people as much as you possibly can will give you the greatest impact. And I remember Miranda Harcourt, the actress and trainer of actors and actresses, said to me once that acting, it's a John Wayne quote, acting is looking people in the eye and telling them the truth. And there's an element of that, I think, in public speaking, that if you can look somebody in the eye and connect, you'll do well. I also think you're freer, and you've got to be confident to do it. If you're not confident, it's not going to work. But most of them, and things like the general debates where, you know, I did my, you know, bit over the years, would often be just a handful of words and phrases written on a bit of paper that I would then refer to rather than writing it out long
really?
Form. Yeah.
Because your general debates are kind of notorious for being, at least for the first half of them, basically stand-up comedy routines.
Yeah, which are based on basically a word or a phrase or a sentence. In the interests of this interview, I did get, you know, I had some staff who were really good at that stuff as well, and we would kind of workshop some of the jokes and get them ready. But I've almost never wrote out a general debate speech in long form. They were usually just words and phrases, which I would then use as part of the routine.
Tell me about question time. Your staff have said to me in the past that as a minister, you prepared really substantially for question time. You did not take it for granted. Mm. I don't know how universal that is.
Well, I think you can tell when people don't. I did, and even when I had been doing, you know, answering questions for 6 years, I prepared exactly the same way.
So what did you do? How long did you take? And
so we'd get the questions, you know, well, by the time I'd often see them, it'd be sort of 10:45 or something like okay. that. I would usually, I'd often be in meetings and things, but I'd usually, you know, have a quick look at them, perhaps send a quick message to the staff saying, this is what I think it's about. This is, you know, the kind of...
Because you can't immediately necessarily tell.
No, because often this doesn't stand by all the statements or whatever.
Yeah.
I've got views about that anyway. And you know, like, we'd quickly work that out. And then I would leave my staff to it until about 12:30 mm-hmm. For them to, you know, prepare all the answers and the material they want.
Yeah.
We'd then sit down. Sometimes it'd be 1 o'clock, not 12:30, just because life gets in the way. And then we'd sit down. The first thing we'd do is just look at the primary and make sure we felt we had the primary answer right. And then we would spend the next 40 minutes working through what we thought we were going to be asked, preparing material, quickly ringing people, oh, can you grab this for us? And then every now and then we would practice it a little bit, but by the end I didn't really need to do that. It was just more just getting the material ready. But if you don't prepare and you don't think about the kinds of questions you're going to be asked, I think it's a real risk for a minister because you often will either look like you don't know or you might say something that you don't mean. Because one of the things is to think about, so if they ask me this and I answer this way,
where's that going to go?
Where that's going to go.
Yeah.
And I mean, I even watched it in the very last question time of the week when Chris Hipkins was doing this with Christopher Luxon. And, you know, Luxon was avoiding answering around the cost of the amount of money for the interest deductibility thing, even though everyone knew exactly what the amount was, because Chris wanted a line of questioning, Chris Hipkins, that was led him to be able to say, so you've got enough money to be able to give landlords a tax break, but you've cutting disability services, you know, and that if you're at the other end of that, you want to be sitting there thinking, okay, where are they going to go? And I remember when I worked for Helen Clark, she used this decision tree model. So basically she'd write it out on a bit of paper, but if they say this, then I will say this. If they ask this, then I will do that. I'm not quite that methodical, but you do need to be doing that if you're going to do well, I think, in the House.
Did you used to do the same thing in opposition?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
So you sort of decision treed it to some extent?
Yeah, so if they say, and we do this now with our, you know, I've been supporting some of my colleagues over the last few months, exactly that approach, going through and saying, well, if they say yes, do this, if they say no, do that, if they evade, do this.
Yeah. You said you had opinions about the general first question, the effectiveness of question time.
Standing Orders Committee had a good look at this last year when I was on it, and we didn't quite get agreement, so it hasn't really progressed. I made a real point when I came in as opposition this time round of not asking, do you stand by your statements and actions, but asking actual questions. The issue we've got is that invariably you end up not getting the answers you want, and therefore you flip back to a more general thing to keep them guessing. I have a view, that what we should do is rotate through the portfolios and have a session where a minister is given an opportunity to perhaps speak for, say, 2 to 3 minutes about...
Like a ministerial statement.
Yeah, but pretty much, you know, this is what I've been up to lately. They could choose what they wanted to focus on. And then that minister is then the subject of questioning for the next 20 minutes or whatever it is. And you could mix it up, so because you want to be able to, you know, issues of the day, so you could mix it up and you could have some questions that can be asked to anybody. But I think this is, it's a waste of everyone's time, essentially, when in actual fact it is, and this is similar to the UK model, you know, where they have Prime Minister's questions, but they also have ministers answering on at particular times as well. I just think it takes away a thing that's a little bit silly and unnecessary and just gives them the time they get would encapsulate patsy questions so that you don't have to, you know, embarrass yourself as a backbench opposition politician asking ridiculous questions. Just let the minister make statements, because that's actually all they're doing. They're getting up and telling you something that they've done lately. And I think we could scrap a whole lot of that out of it, but still leave enough room for a bit of cut and thrust and contemporary.
This is the thing I really like about ministerial statements, the recent version of them.
Yeah, with the questions,
But you can stand up as a member of the opposition and also make a statement about the previous answer, you know, because actually if it was just not particularly true, you can kind of point out aspects of that.
Without wanting to blow my own trumpet, I think that's what I actually did when Nicola Willis made a statement about the IREX project, the Inter-Island Ferry project, at the end of last year. I did exactly that approach. I got up, I said some things, and then I asked a question, sat down, asked another question, and then made a statement at the end on the basis of what she had said.
And that seems to me to be significantly more useful than question time.
Very much.
Tell me about the kind of skills that your replacements, the people that are coming in, the newish MPs, that you think are crucial to being good. You talked about oratory already.
Yeah, and obviously being able to express yourself is important. I used in my valedictory speech Marion Hobbs as an example of the kinds of things I think you need. And I'll go them in reverse order of what I said. But being empathetic is actually a really important skill, particularly if you are an electorate MP, because you are needing to work on behalf of others. But I think that's the case anyway. We want everyone who comes in here to be empathetic, to understand the needs of others and be able to do that. Some people have that as a high part of their emotional intelligence, others have it as a lower, but I think it's really important. I think I like the idea of MPs being intelligent, if they can possibly be so. I don't mean that quite as facetiously as it sounds, in the sense that in order to succeed, you are having to deal with and process an enormous amount of information. And I don't necessarily mean that you've got to be the brightest kid in academic work. I just mean being interested and able to understand and read and think about how things apply. And having that is important. And then the third, whatever phrase you want to use, I used the word principled when I was talking about Marion, but values-based, I guess, is another way of putting it. You need to come here with a strong set of values. Now, they may not be the same in different parties, but I think that's important, that your basis is values and principled. You have the ability to understand what's in front of you, and you can be empathetic and understand the rest of the world. They feel like the skills you need. You've heard from me about, I think there are different parts of our job that are all really important, but I do think the debating chamber is important. And I do hope we keep the spirit of that place to allow people to debate. I mean, you know, some moments of my political career in that chamber I will never, ever forget. Even when I wasn't an MP, when I was a staff member, and I was sitting in the gallery when Georgina Beyer delivered her speech at the end of the prostitution law reform bill, the emotion in that room as she did that, and it changed a vote, which ultimately is the reason the bill passed. The person abstained when they were going to vote against it, and there you were. And just those moments like that, marriage equality is another one for me, which I mentioned during the valedictory speech. And then just the you know, from a political point of view, that's where people can really shine. And so I just hope we never lose the debating chamber as a place, hopefully, where people are respectful, but certainly also where people give their best in debate.
That was the newly escaped Labour MP and former Deputy PM, Grant Robertson. You can hear more of his thoughts on Question Time online in our programme from Thursday. And in the future on the House, you may well hear from him, amongst other MPs, on things like the psychology of a caucus, the importance of pastoral support for MPs, and the need for more and better electorate work. You've been listening to The House. It's a whakarongo koe ki te whare. This programme is produced with funding from Parliament's Office of the Clerk. Matawa.